We have a chance to talk with a man who brought wonderful radio imagination to us for 18 years on the Let's Pretend radio shows, and for many years beyond that on the great days of radio. We're speaking with Arthur Anderson, and how lucky we are to have a chance to sit and visit with you today.
Well, it's nice to be here in this this palatial Holiday Inn, and when I tell people Newark, New Jersey, they say, oh, well, that's got troubles. Well, Newark is getting better. They've got a new arts center now, but we are not in downtown Newark. We are opposite Newark Airport, and we have a great view of New York City from our window here.
And this is the Friends of Old Time Radio.
Friends of Old Time Radio Convention, mm-hmm. I believe the 21st annual.
23rd.
23rd, okay.
23rd, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I lost 2 years. Mm-hmm. But and I'm here because I made my living in radio starting as a child of 12. And for the next 20 years, 45, 55, and the last Let's Pretend broadcast was 1954. And after that, radio or dramatic radio, that mm-hmm. means using actors, yeah. had just about ceased to exist. I know that some of the daytime serials, I don't like to call them soap operas. I think mm-hmm. that's a demeaning term. Some of them did continue, and Arthur Godfrey continued until around 1960. Those who want to know the exact date can look it up in various reference books. But by then, the networks had used their vast profits from radio to start to build up television. As I'm mm-hmm. sure you know, I'm not
sure,
telling
yeah.
anything you don't know. But my career was not only radio, but that's where it started.
Yeah. What, did you join Let's Pretend almost at the beginning of the Let's Pretend series?
No. Let's Pretend started as a program called The Adventures of Helen and Mary on the David Paley. Do I mean David Paley? No, William S. Paley. Pardon me. William S. Paley's brand new, one-year-old Columbia Network. 2 years old. He started in 29, he put this program on. Two little girls imagine adventures, and these adventures are then acted out by a company of adult actors. Mm-hmm. But most of them were from the Tales of the Arabian Nights, and they were rather violent, and Paley and company thought rather dull, not particularly suited for children. So they said, who can we get to change this program? This program was one of the many what were then called sustaining programs, which means the costs were sustained by the networks in say, look what fine programs we have, in order to persuade more stations to join the network. And those programs went unsponsored, and Helen and Mary was one of them. Okay, so they got hold of a ex-vaudeville actress. Now, that sounds unlikely, but it turned out to be very fortuitous. An ex-vaudeville actress and actress in silent pictures, named Nyla Mack, and she'd also worked on the stage with her husband, Roy Bryant, B-R-I-A-N-T. I'm funny. Sometimes if I have an unfamiliar word, I spell it out.
Sure.
And some people are bored by that, and other people may...
No, I'm writing it down.
Oh, yeah. I can see you're writing right, furiously there. All right. They got Nyla Mack, and at the time, Nyla Mack was then an out-of-work actress. But it was then 1930... was the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a job offered her by CBS, but CBS said they want you to write and direct children's programs. And Nyla Mack said to her friends, I don't have any children, I don't know children, I don't even like children. But it's a job, don't turn mm-hmm. it down. So she came to New York and set about to revamp The Adventures of Helen and Mary, and Paley gave her a carte blanche. Whatever you want to do, I'm sure it will be an improvement, I'm sure, they said. And what she did was to borrow a book of Grimm's fairy tales from her friend Dorothy Stickney, the actress, who was the wife of Howard Lindsay, the playwright.
Mm-hmm.
And they later played, as you know, very many years, very successfully in Life with Father, And Howard Lindsay and Russell Crouse wrote many Broadway plays and other things, and the books for musicals. Anyway, but I digress. I often do digress. I try not to, but
it's all right. It
just pops out. But these things to me are all interesting, and they
sure
are relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So Nyla Mack got the Grimm's fairy tales from her friend Dorothy Stickney, and she proceeded to turn them into half-hour radio scripts. The two little girls still were there to introduce them, Helen and Mary, but the second thing, she got rid of the Arabian Nights, or most of them. Mm-hmm. She kept a couple of two of those stories. And then she got hold of Hans Christian Andersen, of course, and I forget the name of the Frenchman who wrote Beauty and the Beast, but it may come to me later. Then again, it may not. Anyway, Nyla Mack wrote a total of 331 radio scripts from fairy tales and also original stories that she herself dreamed up from various sources, but mostly her own imagination. Mm-hmm. The second change she made, besides getting rid of the old Arabian Nights, was to say, my cast will be entirely children. Why children? Because children have the imagination and the openness to imagine and not to be ponderous. And these children, just like the children, I don't know if they still do, so I'm far away from that, they still do play games of make-believe. I'll be the daddy, and you be the mommy, and he'll be the ogre, or whatever, and let's make-believe, or let's pretend. Mm-hmm. And that became the title of the program in 1934. And she continued to write new stories, and it was a repertory company, which means the more popular stories would be done at least once a year, usually oftener, and the ones that didn't work out were disappeared. Mm-hmm. Nyla Mack kept a record book of the date each story was done. And anyway, I joined the program in May of 1936 and stayed with it until its last broadcast of October 1954. Except for I had 3 years in uniform, but I still got a Let's Pretend when I was home on furlough. I'd let Nyla know, and she would assign a part to me. However, the parts had to be the voices of enchantment or inner thoughts of somebody or something, because she couldn't have a soldier in uniform doing a children's program before a theater full of children.
So you'd be off stage.
I was an offstage voice, voice on filter. And, of course, filter means an electronic change in the voice, which they still use for voices on a telephone, for instance. That's filter. Mm-hmm. Or your inner thoughts, that would be on mm-hmm. filter. Anyway.
Well, where did Nyla Mack find the number of youngsters needed with the talent?
Oh, they found her. That once the program became popular mm-hmm. and started winning awards, it also won the Peabody mm-hmm. Award, I'll have mm-hmm. you know.
Yes.
And the Radio Editor's Awards of newspaper. Nyla Mack would have auditions for children every 6 months. And she would give each, I'm smiling because I can remember the script that she gave each one of us. It was the dog story, and we always used to, we the Let's Pretenders, who became a sort of a family, some of us have kept together, used to remember the dog story. It's about a little boy, or it can be a girl, who's selling newspapers on the street, and he has a dog named, he or she has a dog named Tubby, and it's about probably a one-page script, maybe mm-hmm. two. And the dog runs out on the street and is hit by a car. And the little boy says, holds the unconscious dog and says, oh, please, please, God, don't let my dog die. My dog, Tubby, is all I got. And very, very poignant. And that was Nyla's test for the child. Could the child do emotion? Would real tears come as a result of this? And it was a tearjerker, as you can tell. And if the child said, oh, dear, God, please save my tummy. He's all I got. Nyla would say, thank you very much, dear. We'll let you know. But a few of them, she found real talent. And I wish I had known you were going to interview me, because I have a whole list of Let's Pretenders, some of whom have become very well known, some of whom have stayed in the business, a few have just... when their voices changed, they lost interest and went into something else. But it's quite a list.
Well, a lot more and wonderful information about Let's Pretend is gathered and captured in the book you wrote.
The book I wrote, Let's Pretend, Radio's Best Loved Children's mm-hmm. Program, was published by McFarland of Jefferson, North Carolina, in 1994. And I regret to say that it's not a book that you'll find at your local chain bookstore. because they are what's called a library publisher. Mm-hmm. Their books are all hardcover, beautifully bound, but there's no dust cover. Of course, the dust cover is what people see when they go in a bookstore, and the dust cover is very colorful. This is not colorful. It's a red book with black lettering, but it doesn't say, pick me up and buy me. Mm-hmm. So you have to be interested in that particular thing. Anyone who wants to buy the book could get in touch with McFarland. They could go to their bookstore, and they all have computers now, mm-hmm. and I'm sure they could special order it or direct it or find the phone number of McFarland, the 800 number from McFarland, McFarland Company, Jefferson, North Carolina.
Well, when we're through, yeah. we will tell our listeners where they can and how easy it'll be to get the copy of your book.
Okay, well, I have that information in my room. At least mm-hmm. I have the book. I may have to relay that information to you later from my home, because I want it to be correct.
How did you get the job on Let's Pretend?
Now, I did the dog script. I auditioned.
You auditioned.
Oh,
and
sure.
What brought you to that point? Had you done any other acting as a child?
Yes, on radio.
Mm-hmm.
In one of my first jobs, my first job in commercial radio, but that means you get paid for it, was on NBC Red Network, sponsored by Post Toasties, on a program called Tony and Gus. An opera singer named Mario Chamle, Chamle. See, there he goes spelling it again. But people might want to look
sure.
it up. And the co-author, the author and was George Frame Brown. And he dreamed up a story of a Swedish prize fighter and an unemployed singer team up together, and they travel from town to town. And Mario Chamle had two songs in each 15-minute program with a small orchestra with Charles Magnante and his accordion, and Magnante. And all those names are in various radio reference books.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed a little boy, and I was a little boy called Tommy, who was an orphan and who cried a lot. And as a result of that two-week run of that program, I got many other radio jobs. And in those days, you know, you hear about actors making rounds and looking for jobs. In those days, I didn't have to look for work because a cute child who could read lines was very much mm-hmm. in demand. Later on, when my voice started changing, then reality set in, and then it was a different story. But by then, I was so sure that acting was all I had ever want to do that I just went with it. But as a result of being on Tony Gus, I got many other programs. One of them was an NBC sustaining program called Peter Absolute. And it is about a little boy in the days of the Erie Canal. And I was Peter. And that was on from January 36 until September. And the author, David Belasco Howard, was a good friend of Nyla Mack. And he said to Nyla Mack, you should hear Arthur. And that's how that happened.
Well, that was real nice then.
Yes, it was.
And you're talking about there are a lot, if you were cute and could read lines, there were probably a lot of cute kids,
yeah.
but not so many who had the ability to read the lines.
Exactly. The kids who could dry real tears, or could
yeah.
also who could follow direction, don't forget, uh-huh. and who had the self-discipline to stay focused, you know. Not every child can do that. Your child can be charming, but not a good actor.
What about the discipline of the pretenders during the rehearsal period and the broadcast?
That's a good question.
Was that a problem?
Yes. Some of us were rambunctious. Nyla Mack had to be a strict disciplinarian. That doesn't mean she was nasty, but she did hold the reins. She was our unofficial mother. She was our surrogate mother. Her husband was dead. She had never had any children. Her mother, the research I did from my book, I find that her mother was quite a controlling woman, and I think Nyla inherited that from mm-hmm. her mother. Mm-hmm. And it was a good thing. The children on Let's Pretend loved her or feared her or both.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had some of both. So if somebody started acting up, Nyla would, and we were already on mic, we'd finished our read-through, Nyla would say, you better stop that, or I'll come out there and sock you, and you know I can do it, too. But we knew she wouldn't. Mm-hmm. That was the tough talk. But she was a controlling person. Sometimes she would call us in for private conferences. If there's anything serious about a child's behavior, she would never discipline the child in front of the mm-hmm. others. And later on, the girls started growing up. They started coming to her for advice about their romances and their boyfriends and so forth. But yes, we could get rambunctious. And one time we were broadcasting from Liederkranz Hall. Now, Liederkranz Hall was an old German singing society in an old red brick building on East 58th Street. And it was a big ballroom, which CBS rented, because it was had great acoustics, and they needed studio space. Anyone who's seen a picture of 485 Madison Avenue, their headquarters, knows it's a very small building, very unsuited for radio studios. So they rented Liederkranz Hall. One of the shows that played there was Let's Pretend. At this time, I know I'm skipping around a lot of subjects,
okay,
but it's of interest. At this time, there had been some complaints from PTAs and parents' associations and educators that there was too much violence on radio for children. And there was shooting and killing and violence and fightings and stabbings. And Bill Paley said, we're not going to have any of this on CBS. So a lot of the shows that had that, he ruled those shows off the network because he was doing himself out of income, but he thought he was doing the right thing. And instead, Kitty Hour was and still is, what, 4 p.m. on, from anywhere from 4 to 6.
Yeah.
And he put Let's Pretend on at that time, at this time, twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, from Liederkranz Hall. That experiment lasted less than a year, and then it didn't work, and Let's Pretend went back to broadcasting on Saturdays. But you asked about rambunctiousness and acting up. I remember that the ballroom where we broadcast was on the third floor, this beautiful old building with a big, wide staircase with oak banisters. You've seen them. Loved us. Great for sliding down if you're a kid. And I was at the top. But at the bottom of the staircase was a kitchen where the German Singing Society still had their private dining room. And at the bottom of this stairwell, we could see the bald head of a German waiter who had a stack of plates there, and he would use the plates to get the food from the kitchen, you know, and then to bring them in. So I got the drinking fountain with the little Dixie cups, and I filled a Dixie cup, and I went and just poured a little water down onto the plate. And the waiter looked at it and said, wiped it with his napkin and put another plate in. And then a little later, I poured another little bit of water on the plate. And the waiter was very perplexed. Where's this water coming from? And a little while later, the talk back from the control room carried the message that whoever was doing this had better cut it out. So I cut it out. But there was nothing serious. Nyla Nack did not tolerate stage mothers. The mothers would deliver the children to the studio and pick them up after the broadcast. If the children were young enough, they needed a stage mother. But a stage mother, one of the things the stage mothers were and are famous for doing is interfering in the production and wanting the star role for their child and insisting the child was being treated badly. And Nyla did not go for that. If the mother interfered, the child just didn't get cold anymore.
You know, to a kid like myself who grew up listening to Let's Pretend on Saturday mornings,
yes,
I have never forgotten the names of some of the pretenders who always got credit beginning or at the end of the show.
Yes,
and you would always say your own name.
That's right. At the end of the show, during the show, we played our character. At the end of the show, they would say, "The Wicked King played by Arthur Anderson," and so forth.
Well, the names...
What are some of the names you remember?
The names that are etched in my memory forever are Sybil Trent and Gwen Davies.
They sang the theme song, Cream of Wheat is So Good to Eat. Any others?
And was there a Jack Grimes?
There certainly was. Yeah. Jack Grimes was one of the busiest child actors on radio.
Yeah.
Did 10 times the work I did.
Yeah. And, of course, Arthur Anderson.
And Bill Lipton was very often the handsome prince. More often, Albert Alley, A-L-E-Y,
was the handsome prince.
Uh-huh. And Albert Alley, among the Let's Pretenders, went on to become a radio writer and producer of Hop Harrigan and Tom Corbett's Space Cadet, which later on went on television, and then went to Hollywood wrote films for Disney, including, I think, 101 Dalmatians and That Darn Cat and some others, but also became the, and some westerns, I forget which ones, but also became the producer of The Paper Chase.
What about Uncle Bill Adams?
Bill Adams was a very experienced actor who had been, his resume would fill a page, mm-hmm. and does fill a page in various reference books. And he started doing, he had a rather slightly deep, sonorous, resonant voice. And the reason you're asking this is because Bill Adams became Uncle Bill on Let's mm-hmm, Pretend. Mm-hmm. You see, when we were sustaining, there was an announcer who said, this Columbia Broadcasting presents Let's Pretend, and here are the Let's Pretenders. Then the girls, we would all have a conversation about, what's the latest letter asking for a story? So-and-so wants this story. Oh, let's do that story. How shall we go to the land of Let's Pretend? Pat Ryan, you say, oh, I vote we go on a fire engine. Okay, good. Everybody aboard the fire engine. That was the protocol. Mm-hmm. But when we achieved the sponsor, then we had the money, the budget, for there to be an Uncle Bill. And he would be, Bill Adams, one of the things he was known for was the March of Time. He would always mm-hmm. play Franklin Roosevelt on the March of Time. He did a wonderful Roosevelt. And other parts on the March of Time, which, as you know, was the news events of the day were dramatized using actors every week on radio. But Bill Adams was, once he started doing radio, I think he did less and less stage because he didn't have to travel anymore. All he had to do was go to the radio studios in New York, sure. and he would, he made very good money.
While you were working on that show, you were doing other programs then as well.
Oh, over yes.
This whole period of time.
Such as Aunt Jenny's Real Life Stories is one of them, and it's funny because that came from the same studio Let's Pretend did. Mm. And the reason I say it's funny is because when you would enter Studio One, which is incidentally where Orson Welles did the famous War of the Worlds mm-hmm. broadcast on the 22nd floor of 485 Madison Avenue, you would enter that. There you would see Lila Mack with a one hand. She'd bustle in with one hand holding a pack of cool menthol cigarettes and matches, and the right hand holding the scripts and the stopwatch. And she had a pencil stuck in her hair. But Aunt Jenny's Real Life Stories was a soap opera, mm-hmm. and a very good one. And Aunt Jenny would tell these stories, which lasted about, I think, a week. And then the next week, she would tell another story, sponsored by Spry, the all-vegetable shortening. Is Spry still made?
I think so. Spry.
Yeah. And but same studio, mm-hmm. a different world each time. And I was always sort of tickled by that.
So you had many other jobs all along. Were you doing theatrical acting as well at the
time?
Well,
one of my most valued associations was with Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater. Mm-hmm. I worked with Orson on the radio on this program I told you about, Peter Absolute. Mm-hmm. I was the lead, and Orson played very small parts. And I never took any particular notice of him. He was very good in what he did. But later, through this same writer from Peter Absolute, David B. Howard, said I was hired for the Mercury Theater when they did a modern dress version of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. And I was Lucius, the servant of Brutus, one of the conspirators. And Orson, of course, was Brutus. George Coloris was Mark Antony. Joseph Holland was Caesar. And Elliot Reed, who's here at the convention, mm-hmm. was one of the conspirators. Cascus, and I forget the name of the mm-hmm. conspirator. He could tell you. He was one of them. That was quite a wonderful adventure. And it was then that was joined in repertory by another play, Thomas Dekker's bawdy Elizabethan farce, Shoemaker's Holiday. And repertory, of course, means you play one show one night, another show the next night. Mm-hmm. But Julius Caesar became so successful that they said, forget about repertory. They dropped Shoemaker's Holiday. And
well, you worked with Orson on his Mercury Theater on the air, too.
Yes, because mm-hmm. that went on the air. Julius Caesar opened October and November 37, and the Mercury Theater on the air started the following summer. And I was on... Well, the biggest part I had in that was Jim Hawkins and Treasure Island. Mm-hmm. That was later put out on a long playing records.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And that was a marvelous event. We, by the way, have recreated that here at Friends of Old Time Radio 2 years ago with Dick Beals, the voice of Speedy Alka-Seltzer, yes. playing Jim Hawkins and I directing.
You mentioned Dick Beals was the voice of Speedy Alka-Seltzer. Now, you were the voice of
yes.
on commercials.
Yes.
You've been very busy in after the radio days and so many other things.
Yes.
But you were the leprechaun in the Lucky Charms commercial, right?
Lucky the leprechaun.
Lucky the leprechaun.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. Let's Pretend went off the air in 54. I was married in 1963, and that's my wife, Alice, you'll see sitting at the mm-hmm. registration desk mm-hmm. at this convention. And about a month after I was married, I had auditioned for this leprechaun, and auditioned, but the leprechaun had to be the spokesman for the serial, so they auditioned and re-auditioned. And I put my first leprechaun spot a month after.
And you were the leprechaun had you done a leprechaun on Let's Pretend at all?
I never did any Irish parts on Let's Pretend. That's the funny part of it. I could have done it, but there were other actors who were especially good that now always cast as a leprechaun in the story of the leprechaun. And I was the leprechaun, Lucky the Leprechaun, for 29 years.
My goodness.
From October 63 till November 92.
And that's when you stopped.
I didn't
eating
stop.
Lucky Charms, right?
But they just chose another leprechaun.
Well, now wait a minute. You were associated with Cream of Wheat for so many years, and now all of a sudden, Lucky Charms. See, when that gig ended, changed cereals, right?
always cereal, different cereals.
Yeah, right.
The first program I mentioned, Tony and Gus, Post Toasties.
Oh.
Let's Pretend, Cream of Wheat, the Leprechaun. General Mills Lucky Charms cereal,
yeah.
and another radio cereal I was on called Hotel for Pets, which starred Frank McHugh for a while, Puss in Boots cat food, which is made by the Quaker Oats Company.
Oh.
So the cereals have been very good to me over the years.
You've been in a lot of roles here at this Friends of Old Time Radio convention throughout the recreations.
For many years, now since 1980, I think, was the first one.
Yeah. And I know there's a lot of events coming up this evening, and we want to move along. But before you go, how about giving us a sample of Lucky the Leprechaun?
I'm often asked that. When the Leprechaun first started broadcasting, the format was the Leprechaun is alone on camera, and he says, "Ooh, always after me, Lucky Charms. The new old cereal with sweet surprises. Pink hearts, yellow moons, green clovers, a new blue horseshoes. Oh, the kids are coming. I'll turn myself into a bulldozer and get away." And the leprechaun always worked some magic to escape from the kids, and the kids always, but the magic always went wrong, and the kids caught him, and at the end, Lucky or the kids or all of us sang, "Frosted Lucky Charms, they're magically delicious." Boom. And the music went, ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. That was...
That's
that was a
wonderful.
Lot of fun.
That's wonderful.
But doing animated cartoons is also very concentrated mm-hmm. work, very tightly disciplined. But
it's a shame that the joy you've had working on radio and in all of these other jobs you've been doing over the years doesn't come forward in your conversation. You're just so laid back about
yes,
it.
Yes, it's too bad. Yeah. I'm so melancholy. but I guess it has to be said that I am lucky charms or not, in that I am in a profession which I've always enjoyed following, and I've often enough been allowed to follow it, but by that it means somebody phoned me and offered me a job.
Yeah, but you could do the job. And I want to thank you for all of us out there in Radioland for doing such a good job, too.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and it's a pleasure recreating some of those times at Friends of Old Time Radio, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Arthur Anderson.
A pleasure.